Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment reveals the secrets and systems world-class founders use to build their business, their body, and their brain. It's the weekend. That means it's time for a mentor moment. Every weekend, I break down 10 minutes of the most impactful entrepreneurs and episodes we've had. Today is no different. Today, we're talking to Kieran Mulligan, who sold his company, Blue Insurance, for a reported 70 million euro. Today's mentor teaches us it's all about not following convention. It's about thinking differently, and most importantly, not being afraid to think differently. Here is today's mentor moment with Kieran Mulligan. First, quick thank you to my partners.
Thanks to my partner, Square. Everything your business needs, like payments, point of sale, e-commerce, inventory management, chatting endlessly about the weather? Well, you're on your own there. Square. Everything your business needs. Almost. Visit square.com.
If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from my Connick offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Connick offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Connick offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials for my audience. So try it out for yourself for the day, bring your team, no catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Iconic Offices. One of the most frequent questions I get asked on this podcast is, where do I find a mentor? And I've never fully had the answer, but now I do. Introducing Mentors Work, a fully funded mentoring program designed to help your business thrive, brought to you by the Small Firms Association in partnership with Skillnet Ireland. Imagine having a series of one-to-one individual mentoring sessions along with upskilling workshops to network with your peers and learn from experts, as well as a bespoke business plan. And the best part, it's at no cost to you. Join over 2,000 Irish SMEs and see how the award-winning Mentors Work program can help your business to thrive. Places are limited though, so apply today at mentorswork.ie. Program is fully funded until the end of 2023, so get your application in.
So, you know, I would have very much been driving and pushing it, and I wouldn't say aggressive, but, you know, if I want to get something, I sort of focus and, right, let's do this, let's get down this route. And I'll listen to arguments, but if unless the arguments are saying, look, this is definitely not, and you're going totally off the wall, then we drive down that route with whatever we're looking at. So for me, it was... I was okay with it. And sometimes you have partnerships, and we very rarely had arguments at all in the business. And if it did, you just work it out. But it was then just saying, right, you're ultimately making the decision. Okay, I always consulted with the management team around me, listened to their views. And ultimately you as the owner, rather than as a partner, have to make that call. Is this the right way to go, and so on. And I think it just naturally flowed. But very much worked with Dave and Maeve, who are the directors of the business as well. And we would have a regular management meeting each week and discuss stuff. And, you know, we'd listen to them. And sometimes I come out with some stupid ideas and Maeve would go no, or Dave would go no, and they get dropped and so on. But I don't think we made too many mistakes in the business over the years. And that's probably why the business was so profitable. And, you know, again, the innovative side of things sort of draw on the business, you know?
You kind of read my mind there. How do you manage innovation? Because clearly you were innovating kind of consistently, because that was a phrase you brought up consistently there. How did you manage innovation, or how did you drive that forward?
I think there's a number of different features in regards to innovation. I mean, one of the very thing from us starting was that we always wanted to, even though there's only three of us in the business when we first started, was that we always wanted to give the impression that we're a much bigger company. So the presentation of everything that went out to travel agents at the very beginning, and a lot of them would have known me from my previous job, but a lot didn't. So some people actually thought that we were a UK company because the presentation was way ahead of everybody else in the market at that time. And then I think the next innovation is, well, we wanted everything to be online. So at that point, people were still writing pads, and we were one of the first out there to have an online solution that was really slick, very easy, worked very well. And then you adapt, the innovation then adapts to, you're first out into the marketplace with a brand or with a product. And I think, you know, I remember like in 2006 when we launched carhireaccess.com and .ie, nobody else probably even heard of what Car Hire Access was before. And I remember like that one, the wedding insurance and the travel and others, the bigger companies to sort of laugh a bit to some degree and skid, oh, what are these guys at or whatever. But in the end, you know, because we were first out there, we had the brands, and we were first and we were well known, then when others tried to come into the market, like the likes of AIG and AXA and others came try to come in 2010 and a bit later with these products, they didn't make the inroads that we had already made. So first out there to the marketplace with a brand, with a product, and basically doing what it says in the tin, really worked for us from an innovative point of view. We also then dealt with the economic crisis in a way. So one of our big clients at the time would have been Budget Travel, and they went bust in 2008. And that was a massive, that was a £2 million book of business at the time. So to lose that account was going to be devastating to the business. But we adapted. We had come out with the multi-trip product. We decided to go out, as I say, not too greedy and make a small margin. But we also then came out that year with the backpacker travel insurance because people were emigrating. So we could have sat on our backsides and said, okay, we're going to lose 2 million, whatever. But the fact that we came out with this product, we were able to have it up and running within 2 months from the time of when we negotiated to getting the rates off the underwriters and having it rolling out on the website. And have it in Ireland and the UK at the same time. So I think being able to adapt and change and be first out there and deal with the whatever the economic crisis is at the time, come out with a product to suit that. And likewise, that's why we came out with gadget insurance, because the iPhones were starting to come out. So in 2010, we launched the gadget insurance. We were out there with the pets. We were seeing, you know, more and more people taking their pets and stuff like that. And then obviously bikes were starting to get popular at some point during that period. And we rolled out the bicycle insurance as well. So I think to adapt to the climate change is good, or to the economic climate at the time, being able to move on that is important. And yeah, I think, you know, always trying to come out with something different. And again, the 2-year car and home in 15, when prices were through the roof, we spoke with Behavior and Attitudes to be asked them to do some research on us. On the products, and they came back with, everybody loves the idea of 2-year car and home, right. You know, because prices right. Had gone up and people are sick of having to renew every year. So for us, that was a win-win situation.
How do you spot trends? How do you see things coming down the line? Where are you looking for? How are you picking up these signals?
I'm terrible. I won't read a book, but I will read a business or a newspaper back to front. You know, nearly over again, I'd read Bloomberg, I'd read Financial Times, everything. Give me a book and I'm terrible. Like, if people give me books as presents. But I think by looking at those type of, like Bloomberg and so on, are you going in, you can see the trends that are starting to happen. Or, you know, because I was concerned about this, you know, about COVID back in December of, when was it, 19 at this stage? So it was really only starting, but you could see that it was changed by constantly reading up what was going on, reading Asia Times and stuff. You could see it was by now saying, we need to be able to look to adapting at this. And at that time, we were talking with underwriters, but how are we going to deal with this? Because if this comes into Europe, you know, we need to be able to still offer insurance or offer a solution, or we're going to be hit by claims, you know. So we were out pushing the wedding insurance. We were out pushing travel insurance at the time. And then obviously at a certain point, they just said no. And then we go, right, travel has just stopped. Let's go with pet insurance. Let's get gadget out there. Let's move with other products to keep going. Some people might just sit back, but we were constantly moving on it. Look, I mean, we were always wanted to be even more innovative. We wanted to be able to, for people to take a photograph of their reg, send it into us, and then we come back with a motor insurance quote. That was the ideal scenario.
You touched on it earlier there in terms of, you know, you keep an eye on everything. For people that are looking outwards, trying to figure out what's going on, where should they be watching, to kind of where do you get your information sources to spot new trends and new business ideas?
Well, for me, as I say, I don't read books, so I get it from generally it's news, it's online, it's business related. So whether it's through the business community networking groups, so we would have been part of Deloitte Best Managed. We were finalists at EY Entrepreneur of the Year, and we're part of that group of EY alumni, which is a really great group to be part of. But really for me, it's looking at the business side of things and what's coming out in China, what's coming out in Asia, what opportunities are, what crisis is going to bring an opportunity. So people need to, like, you know, if you're if you had contacts in China and, you know, the virus was spreading, is what opportunities, use your contacts to go and bring in all PPE, bring in all. You just constantly have to look at, see is what you're doing, you know, what's going to damage you, and what can you make money out of by these opportunities or negatively or whatever. Or even if business is booming, how can I increase it? How can I get more margin? How can I, you know, make it better all the time? So, you know, constantly looking. But I think networking groups helps. Some are good, some are bad. But I think reading and looking and seeing, you know, what's happening in the world and opportunities, you know, what's new technology wise. You know, I love technology, but I'm not the best at it. So if you're not good at something, is bringing the right team around you that can say, this is the future, this is the way to go, and start investing. Don't be afraid of change. That'd be the big thing I tell people. You know, always look at expanding, look at growing the business and adapting to how technology is changing and how the world is changing, you know.
Hope you enjoyed that chat with Ciarán. He's a truly inspirational dude. If you want to listen to the full episode, go back to episode 159. Just search for Ciarán Mulligan and Gary Fox, and you'll find it wherever you get your podcasts. I'll see you back here in a couple of days.